All right, welcome back, everybody. This is Brothers of the Holy War, Andrew Brown. How have you been, buddy?
Good. It's been a long time, Chase. It's good to be back.
Yeah. I know you got done with school and had some chance to hang out with family. What were some of your adventures you've been on?
I went to Disneyland with my kids. First time either of my kids had been there, so that was fun. And went and saw my family and my wife's family, so we pretty much made a big loop from Phoenix to LA, up to Northern California, to Northern Nevada, and back down.
That's awesome. Did you get any games in?
Watch games?
Yeah.
Always.
That's a nightly thing, right?
Always, yeah.
Sports is a great way to keep everything level.
Yeah, and when it's an addiction like it is for me, you know, it just happens naturally.
You know, one day, Andrew, somebody's going to listen to this podcast that has some crazy power at ESPN, and you're going to be a broadcaster. I just know it. with your addiction and your knowledge with sports, man, it's got to happen.
Only when I'll probably be 16, 65 years old and retiring. I'll probably, you know, maybe one day.
They'll have you come on and be like, hey, tell us about 50 years ago when when Utah won national championship.
Whoa, Chase.
Well, hey, so speaking of that, I think that's one of our talking points for this episode. You know, Utah's coming off the Rumble in the Rockies. We can talk a little bit about that.
We'll look a little more into what happened to BYU's offense this weekend.
We'll break down a little bit of what some of the options could be for the college football playoffs.
And we'll look at some possible BYU opponents in their bowl game and if there's any preference there.
All right, let's do it. Let's kick it over to segment one. All right, segment one, game highlights. So let's talk a little bit about this Rumble in the Rockies we had mentioned. I think you're probably going to talk a little bit about it, but off to a little slow start, but throttled on near the end and really brought it home.
Yeah, senior night for, I think Whittingham said something like 16 seniors. Lots of them that are key parts to the Utah machine at this point. I think senior night probably had a little to do with the slow start, a lot of emotions going on, a lot of things going on, knowing this is your last game in Rice Eccles and everything like that. I also, you know, want to tip my hat to Oregon. I think they, or to Colorado, I think they started out with a perfect game plan and they were ready to go. I think their problem was they emptied the clip about the first three drives and had nothing left after that, and Utah was still ready to go. So they turned it around and up 10 at halftime and just kind of put it down from there.
Yeah, as always, their defense looks incredible. Flying around, some hard hits. They look pretty good.
Yeah, Bradley and I ties the record for sacks in a career, him and Hunter Dimmick. Are now tied at 29. I think he thought he had it, but they gave him a half sack in the second half there, and that ended up equaling a tie. So he's got one more game. I assume they count Pac-12 championship game as sack leader. So he has a chance to take that himself. So that'd be fun. Other big play, and I think was kind of the nail in the coffin in the third quarter, 24-7, and Simpkins takes that pump back for a touchdown, and all of a sudden it's 31-7, and that felt like basically it right there.
Yeah, that place was rocking at that point.
Fun to see.
Yeah, the video footage cracks me up because the whole time he's running down that sideline, it's shaking like crazy. You can't tell what's going on except for it's going nuts.
Yeah, I think I saw some national media, I can't remember who it was, said that he's never been to Salt Lake, but after watching that highlight, he wants to go. It looks like the stadium was shaking. It was kind of cool to see that publicly go out from that angle.
How was the crowd? Because I know the last couple home games, there was some controversy about getting that stadium full. Was it full this game?
I wouldn't say it was. It was a sellout, obviously, because Utah's tickets were all sold. But I think as far as attendance goes, you're probably looking about 85 to 90% full. I heard it was cold. Some fans didn't show up, but I don't think that hurt the loudness there. I guess it was still pretty loud.
Yeah, I imagine. It looked like a lot of fun. Zach Moss, as always, showed up to play, carried the ball 20 times, just a little shy of 100 yards. So he's still making an impact and making a case for the NFL.
Yeah, I think he's ready to finish business here and get there, but he's just been a workhorse all season long. And they even have a quote from him after the game saying that he's never felt this fresh. I know he's had that injury bug, and at this point of the year, a lot of years, he's either been out or not 100%. So it's nice to hear him say that he's still feeling really, really fresh.
So another thing that I noticed, there was quite a bit of running from the quarterback. So Tyler Huntley was running quite a bit. By design or by necessity?
A little bit of necessity. Colorado brought quite a few blitzes. I think they had him a little off balance early, just having to step up in the pocket. But I think that was more to do with pressure in the pocket than it was by design QB runs.
Gotcha.
And I was going to say, I can't talk about this game without talking about Brant Keithy, Utah's tight end. I think he's in the last two games, he has 5 touchdowns. I think he has 2 rushing touchdowns and 3 catching touchdowns in the last 5 games. I think he's only a sophomore, so he can't go, but I think he's made himself some money over the last little bit. The kid's just a freak athlete at the tight end position.
Somebody was saying, I couldn't tell you where it was. Sorry for the non-reference. I'm not sure if it came from an apostle or not, but can't reference it. But somebody mentioned that he's one of the best, if not the best, tight end in the nation, and that the youths need to utilize him more. Sounds like they're doing that more.
Yeah, he just makes moves in the tight end spot that I don't love. The Utah's leading receiver. And he's now scored touchdowns on a tight end sweep in back-to-back games, which you don't see a lot of. But the dude jukes linebackers and runs away from safeties. You don't often see that from a tight end, but he's just been legit.
Nice. Very good, very good. And they set themselves up, and we'll talk about this a little later, but the youth set themselves up as well as they possibly could going into the championship week for potential playoff run.
Yeah, they've done everything they need to do. Of course, you got one more game, but as far as handling things in their control, they're looking good.
Yeah, definitely up to this point. You know, I bet everybody wishes they could take USC back, but at this point, they're still not. So, switching over to BYU, you know, I'll call it what it is. It was a pretty boring game. It was a defensive game. So, I mean, if you love defense, it was an awesome defensive game. The San Diego defense is ranked 7th at this point. I think they're 8th when they played BYU. I think they're 7th now in the nation overall. So, I mean, they're a very good defense, and they showed. I mean, they hit hard. They were creative on blitzes. And they flew around. I mean, they look like great defense, and they wreaked havoc. But so did BYU. I feel like BYU, although in a loss, their defense played very well, and it's just a defensive struggle on both sides. But so get this though, Andrew, guess how many times Zach Wilson threw the ball?
Oh, I think I saw it was a number that started with a 5. I think, right?
Yes, he threw the ball 53 times. 53 times.
Probably too many?
Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to do a balanced run, I know they're crazy good defense and they're going to shut down the run, but you still got to keep them honest. I don't know. That's just nuts. So the other part of it that's kind of crazy, he threw 53 times, but he also rushed 8 times. And the next person who exceeded his number was Katoa. He ran 10 times. So, I mean, you think about the beginning of the season, we had people touching the ball 18 to 20 times, just like the Utes do. But, man, to have your number one running back and your quarterback both combined to have under 20 carries, that's kind of scary. It's kind of, it's not good.
Yeah, especially when he's coming back from an injury a little bit and having some, you know, you'd like to be able to, I haven't had to drop back 53 times and then include the designed quarterback runs, but I guess they felt like that's what needed to happen in order to score points, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you got to give props to San Diego. I mean, 31 of those passes were completed. You would think after 31 completions that one or two or three of them, somebody would make a move, break away or something and get in the end zone. But San Diego holds BYU to no touchdowns and one field goal.
Yeah, I just looked it up. As far as opponents' points per game go, they're ranked fifth. So there's a bunch of metrics to look at. But that, as far as points per game given up, they only give up like 12 points a game. So
yeah, and I think they're top 10 for a lot of different things. I think they're top 10 for something like first downs allowed and total yards. Speaking of, BYU still had over 400 yards. I mean, how do you have 400 plus yards in offense and no touchdowns?
Yeah, you got to finish drives, I guess. So you got to get into the red zone and make the plays needed. It's one thing to get all those yards between the 20s, but you got to make it happen when it counts.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a little bit of props to their special teams. They kept BYU pinned back pretty well and, you know, kind of forced BYU to go long distances, obviously, with that many yards. But at the same time, BYU didn't do themselves any favors. They missed, I think, 3 field goals.
Is that Oldroyd still?
No, they switched.
So Nat?
With the Southam, and he was shooting blanks except for that first one.
So now
one.
You got a kicking controversy as well now, Chase?
Oh my goodness, do we ever. It's funny because I actually called it. I was talking to a friend of mine, and as soon as they started calling like Jake the Meg and Jake Goldroyd and all these different names, I was like, here comes the Sports Illustrated curse. And sure enough, the second that happened, he started missing.
So yeah, I guess you got to think, because I read somewhere that they were thinking about change. I didn't know if they had for sure, so I was thinking when I saw those missed field goals that if it was Oldroyd, they were definitely going to switch, but it sounds like they already had switched.
Yeah, they switched to Southam. They didn't even put him in once, Oldroyd.
That's not as exciting as a quarterback controversy, but it'll be interesting to see who gets kicks in the bowl game.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see, and hopefully he can go and get some help from a professional and over the summer, you know. Because a lot of special teams coaches never kicked.
Yeah.
You know. So hopefully you can go get some help and come back and be better. But speaking of QB, let's switch to goggles on, goggles off, and we can talk about that a little bit.
Okay, sounds good.
I'm going to get some water, too. All right, we are back with segment 2, and I got me some high-quality H2O.
It's always a good thing.
Ah, very good. All right, buddy. So we kind of started hinting at it a little bit. Goggles on, goggles off. Curious, as a Ute fan, do you think BYU has a QB controversy?
As a Ute fan, if I was in, I don't know, I don't want to say if I'm in the coach's shoes because I don't have that kind of knowledge, but I think Zach Wilson should be and is your most talented quarterback. I understand this last game didn't go well. But I think he has the track record to show that over a longer period of time, he does more for an offense. He's a little more dynamic, both throwing and running, I guess the mixture of the two. I know they won games with Baylor, and I know Jaren looked off. I know Jaren looked good during his time playing, but if I am a BYU coach, Zach Wilson's your QB1 next year until something else happens.
Yeah. Yeah, goggles on, bleeding blue. I agree with you. I think you got to go with your number one. You got to go with your prized pony, you know. I do believe that this wasn't his best outing. And, man, watching some of those throws, they just came out weird. I think it was a combo of throwing with a soft cast on. Having played quarterback, I know that when you have something like that in your palm and you're trying to throw a tight spiral, sometimes that ball will come off weird. It'll like rub as it's released out of your hand on that cast. So I wonder if some of those throws were because of that, and then also the strength of your hand. It's crazy how weak your hand can get when you're not using it for weeks at a time. He was out 6 weeks, and so I do wonder if he's just playing at, you know, 80-85%, and he's got a cast on, trying to put up good numbers, trying to throw touchdowns and all that stuff. And you got to go with him, though. You got to go with him, like you said, until you see otherwise, until something's just so bad you can't make excuses for it, then maybe switch. But yeah, he's our guy.
I'll be interested to see. I think what's really interesting to look at is what the talk is like as next season's camp start and everything. Are we coming out and saying straight up it's Zach's job, or are they going to come out and say it's an open competition? And what that does to certain people's psyche, if Zach Wilson hears his coaches say it's an open competition from day one, does that hurt his feelings? Does that hurt his
confidence?
His confidence, yeah. And if it's the other way around and you say from day one it's a Zach's job, does that rub Jaren or Ronnie the wrong way, who show that they can play a little bit too? So I'm interested to see what approach the coaches take as next season starts to warm up.
Yeah, no, I agree. They've got to go in. If I was the QB coach or the offensive coach, I'd go in saying it's Zach's to lose, and that's a possibility. So it leaves that door open, but it gives him the confidence, like, hey, you know, you're our guy, you're getting reps with the number one squad, but don't get comfortable, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. You know, I think where the true controversy isn't in the coaches or in the players in the locker room. I think it comes down to Cougar Board and Twitter and a few people that are already bored because there's, you know, BYU doesn't play for a couple of weeks and there's no championship to play for. I think it's just some fans that are getting bored, and need something to talk about. But at the same time, it's hard to watch BYU lose to San Diego after beating Boise and Utah State and doing this run and USC earlier and what have you. But, you know, looking at it, I think we're going to have all three of those guys back and healthy in order to get through the gauntlet next year. So whatever we got to do.
Yeah, you gotta hope, though, that you don't need all three. Like, I know that ended up working out all right for this season, but next year, if you had to play three quarterbacks, it could get pretty ugly. No?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you look at the track record, BYU's had at least two quarterbacks start, at least, I think three, really, the last 5 to 6 seasons.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just crazy, and you're right, it shouldn't happen. The rest of college football doesn't have that issue, but for some reason BYU injury bug, or just eventually have by necessity have to switch out quarterbacks. So
it'd be nice to play one and maybe another and blow out, and that's would be nice to finally have that happen for you.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So hopes are the one thing that could put this whole thing to bed really quickly is a big win on this bowl game.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to. I'll be interested to see a lot of things as far as if Zach's healthy, if he gets the nod, or what they do, or decide to keep him safe, or what.
Okay, now on the youth side, this is pretty exciting times. You guys are as close as you may ever get as far as the stars aligning and everything working out perfectly to get into the playoffs with a one-loss season. What all needs to happen on Friday and Saturday for you guys to get in?
I was super nervous to see this week's college football poll come out. I was worried that Oklahoma beating a ranked Oklahoma State team, albeit with their backup quarterback. I was worried that that win for Oklahoma was going to do enough to have them jump Utah in the polls. But when I saw Utah at 5, I think all Utah has to do is beat Oregon and have Georgia lose to LSU. I know a lot of people think that Oklahoma beating Baylor will take them over the top, but in my personal opinion, I'm not in the room, I think the committee said at this point we still think Utah's better than Oklahoma, and I don't think Oklahoma beating Baylor while Utah beats Oregon when those rankings are so close is going to do enough to get Oklahoma over. I think if Georgia loses and Utah wins, I think Utah's in.
Okay, so say that one more time. Georgia wins.
Georgia loses. Beats,
oh, sorry. If Georgia loses, that's right. If Georgia loses.
And Utah wins.
Because that would put Georgia with 2 losses on the season.
Yeah, and they're at the 4 spot right now.
Okay, so that would bump them out, which would keep LSU in, which they're probably in either way.
Yeah.
Now, if Georgia wins, that would give you the possibility of Georgia and LSU.
I think the only way, so if Utah wins tomorrow night, I think the only way they don't get in is if Georgia beats LSU. Gotcha. Then I think LSU probably stays in and slides to the 3 or 4. Georgia hops up, Clemson hops up, Ohio State hops up, and I think the 4 stay and they just shuffle and Utah gets stuck out.
Gotcha.
Obviously, now, if Utah loses, they're not in it. Obviously that, but yeah.
Dare I say Las Vegas Bowl?
For what?
If they lose and have a 2-loss season?
No, if they lose, I think Oregon takes the Rose Bowl, obviously, because they win.
Yep.
And the 2 that I've seen Utah in, I think they still get a New Year's 6 Bowl. I think they get the Cotton Bowl against the leader of the non-power 5, so if that's Boise or Memphis or Cincinnati, I think they get the Cotton Bowl, or maybe the Alamo Bowl is what I've seen.
I hope it's not Boise, because I think you guys would just destroy them. I think Memphis would be a better matchup for Utah if it goes that way.
I would love to still play another power 5 team. But that's what I'm seeing. I don't know. I don't know what happens. But I think even if Utah loses, they're still in a New Year's 6 bowl. It just, we'll see which one. Because I think even with a loss, Utah ends up staying top 10. But we'll have to see.
So New Year's 6, is that a we'll take it, way to go, guys? Or is that a disappointment?
Man, at the beginning of the year, that's sign me up. But at this point, It's college football playoff or Rose Bowl, and that feels like anything less than that is slightly disappointing, which it would be. So,
yeah, yep. And I know you. I don't think you like this point too, but I keep going back to it in the back of my mind. At some point, this is also a entertainment decision to some degree, and I think having a Utah team in there bring some people back to watching that may look at it and say, like, oh, just it's the SEC and ACC again, I'm not gonna watch. you know, it's just Alabama. Yeah. Just your normal teams. So, to some degree, I also think that, that's got to play into it and has to go Utah's way.
Yeah, and I know everybody's heard Mr. Feinbaum's opinion on nobody wants to see the University of Utah in the college football playoff. But I think, I mean, Oklahoma's been in the last three playoffs, and they've lost in the first round in the last three playoffs. Like, I know it's a different team and everything, but, like, we've done this before.
Yeah.
I think having Utah in there and a little bit of fresh new blood would do good. And I think it does good for a lot of teams that don't feel like they have a chance. I think it sends a message that it's not just the blue bloods, that if you, you know, if you take care of business, you can make it too.
Have you seen the image that someone made of the playoffs where they start with an Elite Eight and work their way down?
Yeah, I would love an 18 playoff this year. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
I think it's doable too. I think if you do that setup, you could simply knock off the championship or shorten the season by a game or two.
But I don't, like, if you do eight, you probably, like, I know we talk about we're trying to keep the kids safe and everything, but what is that? Two extra games?
Yeah. Like, so I think you knock the season down one, the regular season, right? And then you could still have your championship game. And then, so yeah, it would bump the season up if, for the teams that make it all the way, it'd bump it up by one game.
I mean, it's not like there's not a playoff in Division II, right? Or Division III, or like it's not like it's not an impossible thing to function. I know it probably won't happen, but I would love an 18 playoff.
I don't see why not. Again, going to that business decision, they'd be making so much money. I would watch every single one of those games.
Yeah,
and you know, every sports fan would.
It'd be fun.
Yeah. Buffalo Wild Wings would love it.
Of course.
A sponsor for this episode. No, I wish. That'd be cool someday.
Yeah, we'll see. You know how long it took to go from the BCS to a playoff? All the whining and crying and everything it took to finally get a playoff. Now we'll have to do the same thing to try to get to eight.
Yeah. Yes, agreed. So here's another goggles on, goggles off question for you. 16 seniors leaving Utah, as you mentioned earlier. That's quite a bit of seniors. How does that hurt the Utes for next year? Or does it?
It definitely does. You're not. I mean, this is a special season. One football team and one of the best football teams to ever play at the University of Utah. I can't, you know, you can't say you're going to come back and be the same team after that. But I think they've had a decent recruiting class in the last little bit. And if there's one thing I don't worry about under Coach Witt and under Coach Scally to a lesser extent, it's the defense. Year in and year out, Utah loses NFL defensive linemen, and you think, oh man, this is the year Utah finally sucks. And every single year they come back and have their kids. I know losing Huntley and Moss is a huge deal, but I think because they both have been a little bit injury prone, we kind of know what we have behind them. Jason Shelley's started four or five games, and we have a plethora of running backs who've gotten carries as well. So it's definitely, I'm not at predicting or even saying I think Utah's the favorite in the South next year, but I don't think they fall off a cliff and turn out to be terrible next year either.
All right, so they don't pull at Washington.
No, I think Utah's every bit as good as, they're not the favorites like they were last year in the Pac-12 South, but I think they're going to compete for sure.
Nice. And that's, you know, that's power of Pac-12 recruiting. You'll be able to, if you can pull it off, right?
Yeah, yeah. This year was a little slow, but they're starting to pick up recruits left and right at this point. So it's an exciting time to be a Ute fan for sure.
And, you know, you give credit a little bit to being part of the Pac-12 and, hey, kid, you can go play in front of your family down in California or where, what have you.
Yeah.
But I think I got to give more credit and more props to them having the same head coach for so long that it's pretty consistent. And where is his strength? Defense. And where does he get his recruits? Is, you know, at least for him personally, he's on the defensive side.
Yeah,
I think it's because he's been there for so long, been such a rock.
Yeah, you ask any of the Utah recruits that have come in the last couple of years, any of the big high profile kids they've gotten from Jordan Wilmore to some of the kids they flipped over the last couple of years, that you ask them why they came to Utah, and without a doubt every single one of them says it's the family atmosphere, it's the camaraderie amongst the group. And I think that starts with Witt and the fact that he's been there forever and that he knows and that the kids know he's going to be there. Like, it's just a different atmosphere for sure.
I do feel like with Utah being on the up and up right now and getting some of these recruits and doing well, I feel like if they had the same kind of TV coverage as some of the SEC teams, they'd be a lot more of a household name.
Yeah, you got to keep doing it. They got to keep doing it. Once they do it year in and year out, you start to get a little publicity and more games on ESPN instead of the stupid Pac-12 network and so on and so forth. But, you know, it is what it is right now.
Yeah. Yep. So I think having that little piece against them, but still being where they are, that's pretty dang impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, like I said, good time to be a Ute fan.
But, it was good. Good year to start a podcast.
Okay, I'll switch gears here for you. Back to the BYU side. I think it's official. BYU has accepted that they're going to the Hawaii Bowl. That's correct, right?
Yes, that is correct.
And it looks like, from most things I'm looking at, that it's probably Hawaii they're playing. But there looks to be some other options there. As a BYU fan, any preference in opponent there?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, Hawaii's not a bad option. BYU's got a lot of history with them. You know, back in the 80s, 90s, even in the 2000s when I was in high school growing up, played Hawaii lots and lots of times, lots of history. So, I mean, it's not a bad thing, but just to play another Mountain West team for this year, it would be nice to switch it up. Now, the contract with the Hawaii Bowl says that it would be a Mountain West opponent or an AAC opponent. So personally, and I think a lot of fans think this way, that it'd be awesome to play someone in the AAC, just someone that we don't normally see, someone that we haven't played lately. So my preference, which I highly doubt this would happen, but it would be sweet to get Memphis again. And you remember the last time we played them, ended up with a big fight.
Had to keep the security guards on the field for that one.
Yeah, so I think it would be intense and chippy, and one that people might tune in for, just because they know that there's bad blood.
Yeah, I think probably your only bad case of opponent is if Hawaii has somehow beats Boise State, and then you get a even a lesser known Mountain West team. That would be a pretty big bummer, no?
Yes. So as an opponent, yes, for sure. Now, looking back over the last couple of years, 17, BYU doesn't go bowling, right? 18, they get into a bowl and they go to the Idaho Bowl. Still was fun. They did well. They played very well. I was at that game. They had fun. But it's the Idaho Bowl. I mean, we'll be real. So the fact that they're going to Hawaii, no matter who their opponent is, and they could have some fun on the beach, they're going to go surfing, their family's going to be there, it's on Christmas Eve. I just feel like this hopefully kind of gets that mindset for the players that, hey, we play well, we do, we get to this bowl game. It's a lot of fun. We get to travel and see some awesome things versus we have a crappy season and then we go to Idaho Bowl. So hopefully it puts some ideas and some vision into these young players.
Yeah, that makes sense. I agree.
Yeah. So, yes, as a fan, to play like a Wyoming or something, yeah, that stinks. We just played them a couple – or like what – 4 or 5 years ago when Van Noy was a senior. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're in a bowl game and it's somewhere besides Idaho, so that'd be fun.
Yeah, you can't complain about change of scenery, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's everything for goggles on, goggles off. What do you think, we switch gears? That sound all right? I lost you. All right, next segment. Segment 3, games around the nation. So we'll focus on the championship games. I'll kind of rattle them off really fast and we can focus on a few of them. We've got LSU versus Georgia, Clemson versus Virginia and Bronco, Ohio State versus Wisconsin, Oklahoma versus Baylor, Cincinnati versus Memphis, and Hawaii versus Boise. So we talked a little bit about this one earlier. This has a direct impact on the Utes, LSU versus Georgia. Man, I have a hard time seeing any other way but LSU winning.
Yeah, Georgia's defense is nasty. I think they slow LSU down a little bit, but I just don't see Georgia scoring enough points to beat LSU. And I'm saying that both as I'm cheering for LSU and as I just don't think they can beat them.
As a future ESPN analyst?
Yeah, as a future ESPN analyst, for sure. But yeah, no, I think LSU has too much offense and Georgia doesn't have enough offense to score enough points. Even with that Georgia defense slowing LSU down, I had to make a prediction somewhere like 28-17 LSU.
Yeah, LSU just all around has just been so impressive. I just don't see how anyone can really stop them right now.
Yeah,
I think if Alabama can't do it.
I think between LSU and Ohio State, I think those are the only two teams that can lose this weekend and still stay in the playoff picture. I think if either of those two teams lose, I think they still slide in. What do you think?
LSU and which one?
Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep, perfect. That's exactly what I was thinking. Ohio State just looked too dominant. You know, and not to be dogging on the Utes or anything, but if I had to predict who would be in the championship, LSU, Ohio State, I mean, that would be kind of my guess right now.
I mean, even with the reddest goggles I have on, I can't predict Utah to beat either of those teams.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope they'd play them, but I'm not predicting Utah to beat those. Those two teams appear to be the best two teams in the country, but I guess that's why we play the games.
That's right. Any given Sunday, right?
Or Saturday in this case.
Or Saturday. Now, Clemson's kind of an interesting one. A lot of people have said that they've had probably the easiest schedule of the top four teams that are top four right now. Now they're playing Virginia, and Virginia's lost a couple games, and they're ranked 24th, I believe. Do they have a shot against Clemson?
Oh man, I would never pick Virginia to beat Clemson, but I'm cheering for them hard to do so. Clemson losing, I think they're almost assuredly out. But I think Clemson's too talented, and I think Dabo's done a great job of keeping a chip on their shoulder all year. I don't know how he tends to do it every year when they barely ever lose a game, but he somehow has a way of convincing those dudes that it's the world versus them year in and year out, and they come out and show it.
Yeah, he would be a fun one to play for, just with his energy and just some of his monologues and stuff that he goes off on. They'd be pretty funny. Cool.
I wouldn't want to be on his bad side, that's for sure. But he seems to be a great motivator.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. So I'm with you. I'm rooting for Bronco and hit that coaching staff. They did amazing things at BYU, went to Virginia, and are kind of showing, hey, you know, we're great coaches. so they've taken two universities that were in tough spots and have tough academic and stuff, regulations or rules, whatever, and done a great job. But I think Virginia at their very, very best still doesn't outbeat or outplay Clemson at their, 50%, 75%.
Yeah.
I have hard times seeing that.
Yeah, I don't see a way Virginia wins, unfortunately, but might just be the way it is.
So then another one that I think might be a little lopsided, Ohio State versus Wisconsin. And I love Wisconsin's ground and pound and just their kind of hard-nosed defense mentality. But again, Ohio State, they just have the athletes and they've got it deep too. So I just don't see how Wisconsin can hold up against Ohio State.
Yeah, I picture a way that, Wisconsin holds onto the ball and plays good defense and tries to slow them down, but that Ohio State offense is just seems to be pumping on all cylinders, and they got athletes everywhere, and their defense isn't a slouch either. So yeah, I don't see a way Wisconsin wins that football game either. I think Ohio State maybe by two or three touchdowns even.
Now the other one. Now this one is probably the closest championship game of the Power Fives, right?
Yeah, outside of maybe Utah, Oregon. I think Utah, Oregon probably fits in the same close category.
As being close. Oklahoma versus Baylor. It's a toss-up, really. I could see Baylor going out and doing really well and beating Oklahoma, and I could see Oklahoma wanting to prove something and try and slide into that fourth spot and just coming out. I just don't know who's going to win that one.
Yeah, I'm hoping one way or another that it's a tight, really good game that neither team's able to make a huge statement and in the committee's eyes to jump the Utes. But, I mean, Baylor was up on Oklahoma pretty big early in that game. I don't think Baylor's going to be scared of Oklahoma. Oklahoma made that huge comeback, and tip my cap to them. But I think Baylor thinks that they can win this football game, and I wouldn't be surprised either way. I think I'd still pick Oklahoma if I had to pick, but Baylor could win it very easily.
Remind me where this one's at.
Oh, they play a neutral site, I'm pretty sure, but let me look.
Okay. Yeah, and I was just thinking it'd be funny if, because LSU versus Alabama was such a high scoring game, and normally those are like 3-9 or super low scoring field goal kind of games, be funny if this is reversed as well, if Oklahoma versus Baylor was kind of that defensive struggle, who can kick the most field goals or something.
Yeah,
have it 6-9. But the more I think about it, the more I realize the Big 12 is not known for their defense, and so it's gonna be a shootout, I think.
Yeah, and it's in Jerry World, so they're playing in Arlington, Texas.
Okay.
So,
which for those two teams is actually a pretty good neutral site.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oklahoma travels well, and Baylor's not too far away.
Plus, I think Baylor's probably pretty pumped to be where they're at, and that fan base gets pretty excited. So, yeah, I think it should be probably 50-50 attendance, but I guess we'll see.
The other two, they have some weight on BYU, Cincinnati versus Memphis. If Cincinnati loses a second time to Memphis, it could mean Cincinnati might be the team that goes to play BYU in Hawaii. And that's if Hawaii beats Boise. And there's a lot of ifs in that statement. So,
yeah, and I think the biggest repercussion from these games is I think those three teams are the top three non-Power Fives, right? Which means the top Power Five ranked team automatically gets a New Year's Six Bowl. I'm not saying that wrong, am I?
No, that's correct. The highest ranked non-Power Five.
So I think Memphis is at 16 right now. Boise's at 19. Cincinnati's at 20. So I guess depending on the outcomes of some of those games, you have a flip there, but I don't know.
Yeah, because if Boise loses, they probably give up some spots. Memphis wins, and then maybe Cincinnati goes to like 25 or drops out of the top 25 altogether, maybe. I don't know. But if they do that, then it's the possibilities of them going to Hawaii go up.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, we'll have to see how those ones go. So looks like a lot of teams fighting for a lot of things here.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not as many games as normal on a weekend, but the stakes are incredibly high, so it's really, really fun to watch these games.
Yeah, it should be a really fun weekend after Friday's over. Tomorrow's not fun for me. It's just business.
Is this where you start to lose your hair?
Yeah, it's just start. Continue.
All right. Well, speaking of that, let's talk a little bit about what keys Utah need to bring to the table to win tomorrow in segment four coming up.
Okay.
Segment four, keys to this week's game. Now we're going to skip BYU since they don't have a championship game or anything. And we'll wait until we talk about the Utes and BYU's bowl game once we know where the Utes are going. So, Mr. Brown, you're up for this week's keys to the game for the Utes.
I mean, I could try to be really philosophical here and all these things, but I think it's pretty simple. Utah's had a recipe to win football games all season, and that's be really nasty on defense and really efficient on offense. I think if they do both those things, they win the football game. The one I'm most interested to see is Oregon's defense is better this year than it has been in years past. They've been particularly good at forcing turnovers, particularly interceptions. I think that is how they've kept their defense stats-wise down, as they forced a lot of you can't get a lot of yards on them. I think that's been a strength of Utah's offense, is taking care of the football for most of the year, particularly Tyler Huntley. And I think that if Utah takes care of the football, their offense can exploit a tired, more athletic, less physical Oregon defense. Obviously, I think the matchup of the game is Oregon, which has three or four pros on it, versus Utah defensive line, which has two or three pros on it. I think the winner of that is crucial to this football game.
Yeah. You know, with their quarterback being as good, but also as young as he is, if they can get into his head a little bit, rattle him, even just a little bit, I think that'll go a long ways. Cause I feel like for the Oregon Ducks, he is the keystone to their offense.
Yeah, he's a stud and possibly the first round pick this year. We'll see. This will be by far the best defense he's seen this year. And I think Utah's one of the few teams in the Pac-12 that, even with Oregon's offensive line, is going to be able to get some pressure with four down linemen that he's going to see. And that I hope he makes some mistakes. He made a couple against Arizona State through two interceptions. And I think if he turns the ball over this week against the Utes, that Utah has an opportunity to make it a little bit ugly. I'm not picking them to do that. But I think if Utah forces a couple turnovers and takes care of the ball, I think Utah wins by a couple scores.
Ooh, so you're going to go like a 14-point difference?
If I'm making a full-on prediction, I'll go 30-23 Utah.
All right. Okay. I can see that, because both offenses are going to produce some points, so I could see both of them getting up that high.
The only hesitation I have is it's supposed to be pretty rainy and cloudy, and that's real grass there, so that field might get a little mucky and gross, so maybe that affects it. But I think Utah's going to be able to score points. I think Oregon's, like I said, Oregon's defense has improved, but I trust Witt and and the offensive coordinator to come up with a game plan. And I think they've come too far to let down now. So I think they score some points.
And they're in Levi Stadium, correct?
Correct, yeah.
No. Did San Francisco play on that field this past Sunday, or was that the week prior? I'm trying to remember.
That's a great question.
I'm just trying to think of how chewed up it would be from a Sunday game. But
let's look. I can tell you pretty quick.
With NFL guys running around on it.
It was Ravens Niners on Thursday night.
Also, it's been more than just since
Sunday. Yeah. I don't know. It was Sunday, but it was in Baltimore. So yeah, no cleats on there last week.
Okay.
So yeah, field should be all right, but it's gonna rain for sure. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, if anything, hopefully Moss takes this opportunity and ABC, no other game on that night, takes that opportunity to show off a little bit.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if it turns into a slugfest, smash mouth, run the football game, I take the Utes in that for sure.
Yeah, so that might go in your favor.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. Like I said, no BYU this week, so we'll catch their keys to the game once we kind of know who their opponent is. So let's switch it over to the last segment. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right, let's do it. Final segment five, final rant. Andrew, you want to lead off tonight?
Sure, yeah. I'll keep it short and sweet. Kind of my same old, same old. I've had the theme of a business trip for Utah since we lost it to USC, and I think they need one more business trip. I think they've worked for, particularly the 16 seniors over the last 4 years. Everything they've worked for, every goal that they've set for themselves are within reach. It's all right there and even more. I'm not sure you set a goal for college football playoff at the beginning of the year, but I think every goal they've worked for is one game away, and I think they're one business trip away from finishing it, and they're going to do it.
Like I said, I think this is as close as those stars aligning with the team and what's happened with college football this year, and Alabama falling off the table a little bit to get it done. So you got to do it one more time.
One more.
And on my final rant, I'll see if I can't verbalize what I'm thinking. Now, BYU, and especially since Kalani's been here, but historically has had this plague of playing well when there's a purpose, and when there's no purpose, they don't show up, right? And you talked a little bit about it earlier with Clemson. Clemson's coach, even though they might have an easy schedule, he makes it a point that, like, hey, this every game's the championship game, and they show up, right? So let me see if I can give you an example, right? This season, those first four games, super big. They had something to prove, and they were on ABC, they were primetime, and they go out and they play pretty well, with the exception of maybe Washington, right? And then after that, it's like, well, okay, pressure's off, nothing to really play for, and they go lose two really crappy games that they should have won. And then all of a sudden, the pressure's on. Kalani's in the hot seat. The players are like, oh crud, we got to play for Kalani, we got to keep his job, we got to get him rehired or re-signed. And now there's this purpose again, and they play really, really well. Kalani gets signed, they're going to a bowl game, pressure's off. They go and lose against a San Diego team that they should have at least scored against, right? And so I guess my final rant is, maybe to the coaches, maybe to the players. I don't know who it's to, but just got to figure out ways to consistently have BYU have something to play for, because when they do, they play well. And when they don't, it's like, meh. obviously they want to win, but so
yeah,
make any kind of sense.
Yeah, find some the kind of motivation that has them bring their A game. I know it's easier said than done, for sure.
Yeah, I almost feel like had Tom Holmo not signed the contract or extended the contract with Kalani, not that he wasn't going to, but just didn't do it until after San Diego, the players probably would have played a little different. That it's just their tendency.
Yeah.
Because they would have still felt like, crap, we still got to put one more together for Kalani. I think it would have been a different show.
Yeah, going to have to find something. I think maybe there's some kids playing for positions next year and things like that. You got to find something to bring your A game one more time, go get a bowl win, end the season on a good note, and get trajectory in the right direction.
Amen. Like I said, that whole QB controversy and, you know, was this a good season or bad season, what have you, that can all go away with a big win at a bowl game.
Yeah, for sure. Especially if they show up and take care of business. I'm not saying you have to blow them out, but you want to score points. You want to look a little more productive as far as the offense goes, for sure.
Yep. You know, if you put those 400 yards on the in the stat book and then put 21, 30, 40 points up on the board, I think, man, then it really shuts up critics.
Yeah, you kind of go. I get things situated. The nastiest schedules in college football next year.
Oh man, I'm kind of interested to see what their what is that abbreviation, but the toughness of schedule ranking. I want to know what theirs is.
Yeah, it's got to be up there. It's going to be interesting for sure.
Yeah. So, all right, man. I think that's all the time we got for tonight. But hey, fingers crossed. You play the Oregon tomorrow night at 6 o'clock Mountain Standard Time, and we'll see everybody next week and we'll talk about how it all went.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.